Now, to begin, let's all meditate together simply by first making our mind peaceful and quiet, focusing upon the coming and going of the breath, and then remembering the meditation we did yesterday on generating a sense of equal kindness and warmth towards all beings, and try to generate your mind in that aspect of universal loving kindness as our motivation for engaging in the activity of discussing Dharma today. Now you can relax and stop the meditation. Now, the general picture that we established yesterday, in talking about the subject of the wheel of life that rises in dependence upon the 12 links of interdependent origination. In a broad scale, Buddhism presents the universe as being unimaginably vast, and throughout the universe there are different regions where you have the appearance of solar systems like stars and planets and galaxies and so on. And these are coming and going out of existence in terms of the gross matter of established stars, planets, and so on, and subtle matter in Buddhism, space particles, when in region of the universe, in a particular region, all matter is reduced to its most finest particles. But due to the changing karma of the sentient beings associated in that region, then after a time, the space particles aggregate into, once again, into the physical environments suitable for the inhabitation by embodied beings such as ourselves and animals, and the type of life that we are familiar with. So there is indeed a beginning to solar systems, to galaxies, suns, planets, and so on. But Buddhism does not present a beginning of everything, like a beginning of the universe. They say that it is not inconceivable, but it's not seeable, in Buddha's words. In my omniscient wisdom, I cannot see a beginning. So we know that there's a beginning of life on our earth. We know that our earth had a beginning, and so on. So we naturally ask the question, well, where did it all begin? In our presentation yesterday of causal things, like all physical things, all mental things, you know, we mentioned that everything that's physical has subtle changing moment by moment, and all mental experience, the continuation or continuity of mental experience, is also changing moment by moment. Our mind is never like fixed in one thing. It is changing conditions and also changing moments of time. Our mental experience is constantly changing. We mentioned two types of cause, the substantial cause and the cooperative conditions. The substantial cause indicates that matter, like the whole material world, is changing moment by moment, so the present moment of matter comes in dependence upon the substantial cause, a material changing continuum that's given rise to the present moment, that will change and give rise to the future matter, whether we're looking at matter in gross form, atoms, molecules, and so on, or more subtle form, electromagnetic energy, even gravitational energy. I think one day they will discover that it has a material or energy. Energy, it's given the word energy, but energy is very broad, but it is a material phenomenon. So, as matter depends upon a substantial cause of matter, then if you go back and back and back, there can't be a time when material things came out of nothing. Material things necessarily have a substantial cause. So, logically, there is no beginning to the material phenomena of the universe. And similarly, mind, consciousness, mental experience, the present moment, arises in dependence upon the cessation of a prior moment of awareness, of consciousness, or subjective experience. And so, again, although mind is a different type of phenomenon from matter, it has no physical properties, it too has this continuum, which if you go back and back and back, you can't find a moment when each individual's mind stream came into existence. There has to be a beginningless past for our minds. Think about it. That's the way it is, as Holiness the Dalai Lama would say. Now, so we have sentient experience in so many different aspects, and this is depicted in this diagram in the notes and on the, if you have it on your tablets. So this picture shows the desire realm. Of the three realms of rebirth, the desire realm, form realm, and formless realm, this shows the desire realm existence. Now you have this this wheel, if you like, the wheel of life, and it is held by this creature, this sort of demonic-looking creature, who can be the personification of death, Yama, the Lord of Death. But in essence, it means impermanence, that all the types of rebirth and the beings who are reborn in the different realms are all embraced or held in the fundamental reality of impermanence, moment by moment change. Nothing is constant, like unchanging forever. Then holding impermanence, holding the wheel by arms and feet, indicates that the experience of sentient beings within the wheel of life is determined by karma and disturbing emotions. Karma and afflictions or disturbing emotions. That's the hands and feet. Around the periphery of the wheel, there are 12 diagrams, and these represent the 12 links of interdependent origination, beginning with ignorance up at about 1 o'clock, which shows a blind man sort of walking with a stick, using the stick to find his way. The blindness symbolizes ignorance, not knowing reality, and having the aid of a stick indicates that in order to find our way, we depend upon guidance of an enlightened being such as a Buddha. So up in the top left corner, there is the Buddha, and Buddha is pointing towards the full moon. So the full moon represents the mind totally clear, just as there is no more shadow in a partial moon. The full moon is, all the darkness has been completely removed. So similarly, the darkness of ignorance and afflictions and karma, when that is totally extinguished, one's mind achieves nirvana or liberation. So the full moon symbolizes liberation or nirvana, the complete cessation of all disturbing emotions, the darkness, disturbing emotions. Underneath, in Tibetan, there's the some script, and in your notes on the second page, the translation of those notes is saying, Buddha is saying to us, exert armor-like effort in following the path, go beyond the wheel of life, and attain nirvana. In dependence upon the doctrine, practice the three higher trainings, and destroy all mundane creations, like an elephant destroying a house of mud. Vanquish the Lord of Death, and overcome the sufferings of birth, sickness, aging, and death that are due to karma and afflictions. Be mindful in your three doors of body, speech, and mind, and engage in the Eightfold Path. May all suffering be brought to an end by abandoning rebirth taken through karma and afflictions. So that's the instructions. I think you may have heard that the story of this painting, which was first painted in the time of the Buddha, when the custom in India, kings of different regions would send gifts to the other kings, and one king received a very valuable material gift from another king, and he didn't know what he could give sort of to surpass the quality of that gift. So he went to Buddha, and Buddha told him to get somebody to paint a diagram of the wheel of life as similar to what we have here. So the king had the painting made and informed the recipient, the other king, that he was going to receive a great gift and should look after it very carefully. And so a whole procession was arranged, this rolled up painting was taken. And the second king looked at the picture, and it was explained the meaning of what was there, and it was he came to appreciate and understand the wheel of life and its value. And the Buddha later said that this painting should be hung near monasteries, near the entrance to monasteries, and pilgrims and people visiting. There should be always somebody, monk or nun or layperson, who understands the meaning, somebody nearby to explain the meaning to the pilgrims. So that's the, the origin of this diagram from the time of Buddha. Inside the peripheral circle showing the 12 links, there are five or six sections showing the various levels of rebirth within the desire realm. The hell realms at the bottom, animal realms, hungry ghost realms. There's the human realm, then the asura or titans or demigods, and the sura, the desire realm gods. And you can see there's the conflict happening. There's a tree. The tree whose roots are in the realm of the asuras, the demigods, but the fruit is in the realm of the suras, the higher gods. So that's the gods of the two realms, the realm or the heaven of the four great kings, and the heaven of 33. So the asuras, symbolically, this shows that the fruit, which is delicious, is only eaten by the suras. So the asuras, there's one guy trying to chop the tree down. And so they're always going into battle to try to get the higher pleasures of those beings in those God realms immediately above them. Then the next circle towards the center is divided into two. There's the white side and a black side. So this represents the the between state, right? The bardo, we're in between state. And when we die, we can either a virtuous karmic potency can ripen, which will send us to a happy rebirth. So that's the upper half of the rebirth depictions. And so you can see the between state beings. There's a human, an asura who's wearing armor, like going into battle, and the asuras. So they're moving upwards to a happy rebirth. Those who die and a non-virtuous karma ripens, or a non-meritorious karma ripens, then they will be reborn in the lower realms. And you can see there's an animal, a hungry ghost, and a hell being who are being dragged down to rebirth in the lower realms. In the very center, there's a pig. The pig symbolizing closed-minded ignorance, in Tibetan mukna. So this is non-virtuous ignorance. And from that closed-minded ignorance, closed-minded indicates that there is strong conception, not seeing reality. It includes denial of karmic cause and effect. So from its holding in its mouth the tails of a snake and a rooster, or sometimes a pigeon. And the pigeon symbolizes desire, attachment, and the snake, aggression, or anger, and hatred. So these are the three root afflictions: ignorance, desire, and aversion, or anger. And so they are the very heart of the wheel of life. They are the afflictions through which we create karma. And so the entire wheel of life comes from these disturbing emotions and karma. And nirvana, the state of complete liberation from the wheel of life, is outside the wheel of life. And so the Buddha is saying, that's what you should achieve by destroying karma and afflictions. Now, on the second page, there's a heading there called the entity of the ignorance link. So we talked about yesterday, we briefly went through the 12 links, the ignorance leading to karmic formation or volition, consciousness, body and mind, and so on. So when Buddha was explaining phenomena, the impermanent phenomena of the world, all things either belong to the virtuous side or non-virtuous, or some he did not specify whether they were virtuous or non-virtuous, which means that they were neutral. So the ignorance link. Now it's important, we're talking about the 12 links. So there's ignorance in general, but specifically we're talking about the ignorance which is the first link in the creation of karma and the whole 12 links. So we call this the link ignorance. So the link ignorance, fundamentally, is the self-grasping ignorance, right? Through lack of awareness of reality, there is, due to imprints from past lives, self and all things appear falsely to exist inherently or from their own side. And so the mind, in its lack of awareness, grasps at that appearance to be true. So that's the self-grasping ignorance. The link ignorance was unpredicted by Buddha to be either virtuous or non-virtuous. Link ignorance also has intellectually acquired aspects and innate aspects. Intellectually acquired, well, innate is what we're born with, from carried in the mind from past lives, and acquired is mistaken understandings that we have learned from mistaken religions or mistaken philosophies about reality, which we believe to be true, but they believe in a permanent self, an unchanging soul, and things like that, which we learn. So that's the intellectually acquired ignorance. So the ignorance link has both those aspects. In terms of the path, we did the Four Noble Truths last weekend. In terms of the fourth truth, the path, the wisdom realizing emptiness, the ignorance link is finally abandoned from the mind during the path of meditation. This is the meditative path that we engage in after having initially realized emptiness directly. Upon that initial realization of emptiness, what we call the path of seeing, at that time, through the power of wisdom, the ignorance link is stopped. Stopping is different from abandoning. Stopping means that the mind is now so strong, has such close awareness of reality, that the ignorance does not manifest anymore. The seed is still in the mind. And when we say the ignorance link is finally abandoned on the path of meditation, it means that all the levels, gross, medium, and subtle, of ignorance are progressively abandoned on the path of meditation. By saying that the ignorance link is stopped on the initial path of seeing, the initial realization of emptiness, that means it's stopped from ever becoming a cause for karmic creation. So from that very first realization of emptiness, the person, the practitioner, who is now an Arya being, a noble being, will never ever create throwing karma for rebirth in samsara ever again. And whatever karmic potencies in the mind stream have not yet been ripened, they're still born, they will be rendered incapable of ripening. So, at that point in the path, the practitioner, as I mentioned before, has a degree of free will. They can choose to be reborn at different levels in order to complete their path, the accumulation of merit, and receiving more teachings, and so on. You know, the path is a very, very long path. So they don't take birth as a result of karma and afflictions, you know, the hands and feet. They take it through wisdom, compassion, to help sentient beings and to further their growth on the path of meditation. So they can be reborn in any realm by choice, whereas we are not reborn by choice. So, just an asking, you know, what is this ignorance link? Well, where does it belong? It exists. The five aggregates, remember the presentation of the body and mind as five aggregates, or the five collections of physical factors and the mental factors, the feelings, discriminations, volitions and consciousness. So the ignorance link is included in the fourth aggregate, the aggregate of compositional factors or volitions. The ignorance link manifests only in the continuum of an ordinary being. Right, so that's what I've just explained. It can only manifest in the mind as a cause for creating karma in the mind of an ordinary being. So an ordinary being is a person who has yet to achieve the first direct realization of emptiness. After that attainment, the being becomes an Arya being. All right, so that's the entity of the ignorance link. Is that clear? Okay. And what is it? I've already explained. It is the innate or the acquired self-grasping of person and unpredicted by Buddha to be either virtuous or non-virtuous. Now, often in the text we hear a presentation of the root of cyclic existence. So, again, the root of cyclic existence is the innate self-grasping of person. So, the acquired self-grasping of person is not the root of samsara, the root of cyclic. It is the innate self-grasping of person or of phenomenon. Phenomenon in this context means everything other than persons. So, even the pillars, the ceiling, everything appears, all the phenomena also have the appearance of inherent existence to our ignorant mind, and grasping of that appearance as true is the self-grasping of phenomena. So you can see there are some things, there's some ignorance which is both the root of cyclic existence and the ignorance link. Can anybody give you an example of an ignorance which is both the ignorance link and the root of cyclic existence? Okay, so think about it. They are both the self-grasping of person. Root of cyclic existence is innate self-grasping of person. Ignorance link can be either acquired or innate self-grasping of person. So the acquired is not root of psychic existence. But the innate self-grasping of distance, now, that does not manifest as ignorance link on the path of meditation. But in an ordinary person, ourselves, the innate self-grasping ignorance that we have in our mind, that is both root of psychic existence and ignorance link. Okay? Now, what's something which is root of psychic existence but not ignorance link? Well, if we look at the definitions, root of psychic existence includes both innate self-grasping of person and innate self-grasping of phenomenon. Whereas ignorance link is only self-grasping of person. So something which is root of psychic existence but not ignorance link is a self-grasping, the innate self-grasping of phenomenon. Anyway,
Why do you use the word unpredicted in this paragraph?
Oh, so when Buddha was teaching the nature of phenomena, he was asked, and he presented different phenomena, and he was asked, what is this virtuous? Is it, or is it non-virtuous? So he said, say, this phenomenon, like compassion, is virtuous. This phenomenon, anger, is non-virtuous. Other phenomena, like the self-grasping ignorance, he did not predict, he did not specify. So unpredicted means Buddha did not specify whether it is virtuous or non-virtuous. So it's neutral. Okay. Was that your question too?
Question two.
Oh, yeah.
An example of self-grasping of phenomena which will be under ignorance link. I'm trying to think of an example of self-grasping of phenomena.
Self-grasping of phenomena, yeah.
What? Versus self-grasping of person.
Yeah. Yeah, self-grasping of person. So there is our own I, our own person. When we think I, our own I appears to our mind as inherent existing. So when our ignorance grasps that that is true, that's self-grasping of person in relation to one's own self. But then there are other persons. And so the persons of other people and animals, and, you know, I mean, Buddhism says that every sentient being is a person. So when they appear to us, they appear as inherently existing. So, you know, mom and dad, that when we think of the person, mother, our father, their person appears as inherently existing. So that's also self-grasping of person. So there are those two aspects. Self-grasping a phenomenon is every other thing that exists appears to exist inherently. So grasping at things other than person as existing inherently is the ignorance that is self-grasping of person. Yeah. Yeah, so we're just sort of, in analysing these definitions between root of psychic existence and link ignorance, like we're distinguishing what's link ignorance and what's root of psychic existence. So you see, the definition of ignorance link is just the innate or acquired self-grasping of person. It doesn't include self-grasping of phenomena. Whereas root of psychic existence does include innate self-grasping of phenomena. So something which is root of psychic existence but is not ignorance link is the innate self-grasping of phenomena. You were first. Collectively, you're grasping at the collective persons of all sentient beings. Is that what you...
Right, so not just the human form, but everything that...
Yes, yes, self-grasping, that's right. Buddhism says that every sentient being is a person. So when there's a mosquito that's particularly bothering us, We see that as a person. We want to kill that person. Or we get angry at that person, that mosquito. Well, yeah, there are persons which are not sentient beings.
Like
stones? Huh? No. Buddhas. Buddhas are persons, but they're not sentient beings. They are sentient, because sentient means having feelings, and, you know. But when we use the term sentient being, we refer to a being who is not a Buddha, right? To a person who is not a Buddha. Stones are not persons, because a person necessarily is a being who has body and mind. So Buddhas have bodies and minds. They're pure bodies and minds, but they still have physical and mental aspects, the Rupakaya and the Dharmakaya. Yeah.
So in the wheel of
the wheel of life. The pig. No, it is both. But when the pig, actually, it's more. The pig in Tibetan is mukpa, which means closed-minded ignorance. Now, this pig at the very center is non-virtuous. Right? Non-virtuous. In the definition of root of cyclic existence, where we are. Oh, yeah. That is unpredicted. So this pig is not the root of cyclic existence. We'll come to it. The explanation is coming. The link ignorance is the first picture, that is the blind man with a stick. That is link ignorance. Okay. And we will sort out the problem with the pig. Okay. Just the third type of ignorance that's mentioned here. Ignorance of cause and effect. So this ignorance is an acquired denial of karmic cause and effect. Right? So it is not just not knowing about karma. It is an express refutation or denial of karmic cause and effect. And that ignorance is non-virtuous. Buddha said that is non-virtuous because it's so heavy. If we deny karmic cause and effect, then there's no basis upon which to develop morality of non-harmfulness and being kind to others. If there's no, how do you say, distant result of what I do now, then I can do whatever I like to be happy. And there weren't no fault. So that is non-virtuous. That creates very strong, non-virtuous karma. So the three types of karma, meritorious karma, unwavering karma, and non-meritorious karma. So meritorious karma is every karmic action that has an initial causal motivation a virtuous causal motivation. So now here, there's a presentation of every action has an initial causal motivation, and then the immediate motivation, which is the intention at the time the action is created. So whatever we do, a virtuous action, we see some person who's in trouble, we develop some compassion, or I want to help that person. So that is the causal motivation, and that is virtuous. So then we then engage in an action to benefit that sentient being, that person who's in trouble. So the mind at the time of the actual action is virtuous. So it creates virtuous karma. Now it's still a karma, it is a meritorious karma within the wheel of life. So during the preparation, the causal preparation to do a virtuous action to help that suffering person, that's when the link ignorance will manifest. And at the time the link ignorance manifests during the sequence of activity prior to the helping the person, at that time there will be a moment when the mind is unpredicted, when it is neither virtuous or non-virtuous. And at that time, we will be seeing the person as inherently existing. The link ignorance will be manifesting. We will see the person, having initially seen the person with compassion, a suffering person, there will be a moment of grasping the person as an inherently existing suffering person. So that is the actual causal motivation leading up to the virtuous act of helping them. When we're actually giving them food or healing their sickness, what we're doing, the mind is virtuous. So the link ignorance is manifest at the causal, the sequence of thoughts prior to the actual time of helping the person. So that's how link ignorance becomes a motivating cause for a virtuous karma. For a non-virtuous karma, there's a similar sequence. There is an initial in the causal link. Again, we might see a person with who appears to us as existing inherently. We grasp at that. There's self-grasping ignorance, seeing the person as existing inherently, but this person is now threatening us. And so we develop anger towards the person. So we say or do something to harm the person. So that initial appearance of the person to exist inherently and our ignorance, grasping at that to be true, that is the link ignorance for what will become a non-virtuous or a non-meritorious karma. Because at the time of action, when we're saying some abusive words to hurt the person, the mind is non-virtuous. There's manifest anger in the mind. So that creates a second link, karmic formation or the volition of a non-virtuous karmic imprint. So you see, this is how the link ignorance... A big point is here. The mind, the whole mind, at any one moment in time, is either totally virtuous, totally non-virtuous, or totally unpredicted, neutral. You cannot, at any one time, the mind can't be partially virtuous and partially non-virtuous. It can't be partially neutral and partially virtuous or non-virtuous. Right? So this is why we have to ask the question, if the link ignorance is neutral, how can you create virtuous karma? How can you create non-virtuous karma? So this was explained by Buddha, that any action is not just a one-off thing. There's always preliminary or causal thoughts behind our actions, and then there's the attitude of mind at the very moment of the action. So during that preliminary sequence, there is a time when the mind is unpredicted and the link ignorance manifests. It can only be momentarily, but we see a being, they appear as inherently existing, and instantly we grasp at them as being inherently existing. Then we see them as either suffering or threatening. So then compassion or anger arise towards them. But when we first saw them, there was just a neutral, we weren't angry, we weren't compassionate, we just saw a person. So that's the sequence of thought for the second link, karmic creation or volition. Unwavering karma refers to a virtuous karma that is created in meditation for rebirth, and the potency leads to rebirth in a meditative state at the form realm or the formless realm levels. It says, when we seek the higher bliss of the former formless realms, we meditate on the approaches to samadhi, and we create by attachment, by liking that meditative, that mental experience, we have temporarily suppressed all desire for sensory experience, it's just the mental experience, then we create unwavering karma to be born at whatever level of meditation we achieve. Why is it called unwavering? Because those karmic potencies for birth in the form or formless realms cannot change. They will lead to that particular level of rebirth. Whereas meritorious karma and non-meritorious karma can change. The wavering, they can change. Through applying the opponent powers, you know, doing things like the Nyungne practice, which is coming up, then doing that practice, we can change rebirth, potencies for rebirth as an animal, hungry ghost, or a hell being. Those rebirth potencies can be changed to a suffering experience during the purification process. So, you know, a headache, or you know, fever, whatever discomfort we experience during the purification process is the changing of karma potencies which would have led to rebirth, hells, how it goes with animals, to a slight uncomfortable experience as a human being. Virtuous karmas also can be changed. If we create virtue and then we, at some other stage, our mind becomes negative, we can destroy the power of virtuous karmas for happy rebirths at different levels. They can ripen just as small, pleasant experiences as a human, but they no longer have the power, due to our non-virtue, no longer the power to be reborn as a human or asura or asura. So they're wavering. According to future conditions, meritorious karma and non-meritorious karma, their destiny can be altered. Whereas karma for rebirth in the form and formless realms can't be altered like that. All right? I hope it's not too much information. You think it comes clear. Okay, so now the more detailed explanation of those 12 links. Ignorance, we've been talking about. But fundamentally, it's the mental factor that through not knowing reality grasps at a truly existing self and is a motivation for a throwing karma belonging to its set of 12 links. So each manifest ignorance, which is the cause of a throwing karma, is a link ignorance. And so it creates its set of 12 links, which means there are multiple sets of 12 links established by every action we do coming from ignorance and creating karmic potencies. So there are multiple 12 sets of ignorance. 12 links, sets of 12 links. The ignorance link is not the ignorance of cause and effect. Why? Because the ignorance of cause and effect is non-virtuous. And the link ignorance is unpredicted. So, but you can have ignorance of cause and effect, of course, as the immediate motivation for a throwing karma. For a non-virtuous throwing karma. That's what it means by saying that ignorance can be a motivation for throwing karma. The symbol, as we've mentioned, in the drawing is a blind man with a stick. So just as a person with no eyes depends upon something else to find his way, ignorance is a lack of clarity that obscures our minds and we depend upon something else, the wisdom eye of Buddha, to find our way to liberation. Not just find our way home, but to find our way to liberation. So that's the ignorance link. That, as we've explained, gives rise to the second link, karmic formation. So now, specifically, what is this link of karmic formation? It is the mental factor of intention. There are five mental factors which accompany every moment of mind. And intention is that movement of our mind towards its object. That you can say energy or activity of mind of taking interest, you know, zeroing in upon a particular object or situation. So attention then is associated with what we call the second ever-present factor is mental engagement. We zero in on a particular thing and then we engage. Our mind actually engages with that particular object that we intended to experience. Then there's feeling. Objects are either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So there's a feeling of pleasure, pain, or neutral feeling. And there's also discrimination, where we distinguish particular features of the object that our mind has engaged with. So this activity, and there's contact, of course, with the object. So every moment of experience has these five things. There's intention, our mind moves towards something. There's engagement with a specific object. There's the experience of contact with the object. There's experience of feeling, of pleasant feeling, unpleasant or neutral. And there's discrimination, or which distinguishes particular aspects. So whatever we're doing, whatever we're experiencing, those five mental functions are manifesting. So the second link, karmic formation or volition, refers to the intention. That mind intending or connecting with a particular object. So that's karmic formation. So it comes after the link, the first link of ignorance, and it's an intention which creates a throwing karma. So that means those five factors are ever present, but there are other mental factors, some virtuous, some non-virtuous, which can be manifest or non-manifest. So when those five, including intention, are associated with a virtuous mental factor of love or compassion or patience, whatever, they all take the aspect of virtue, and so the whole mind is virtue, and one creates a karmic potency, a virtuous karmic potency, a meritorious karmic potency. If a non-virtuous mental factor is like anger, so you can't have anger and love manifesting simultaneously. It's one or the other. They're opposite. So our minds aren't that mixed up. They're mixed up, but not that mixed up. Right? So love is anger, and love, they are virtuous or non-virtuous, and so when they're associated with an intention, one creates either a virtuous or a non-virtuous karmic potency. So, and through the action, etc., we've got the motivation, the object, the action, we create a throwing karma. That potency has the power to throw the mind into a future life at death. So, again, where does karmic formation belong? In terms of the five aggregates, it belongs in the aggregate of volitions. And it's either virtuous or non-virtuous by association with other mental factors. And it's an object to be abandoned by the path of meditation. So, this karmic formation. Now, the mental factor of intention, that is not karmic formation, the intention alone. That is not karmic formation. Buddha's mind has intention. Every aspect of mind has intention. In single-pointed concentration on emptiness, there is intention. But that's not the link of karmic formation. Link of confirmation refers only to that specific intention which is associated with a virtuous or a non-virtuous motivation in a mind that has ignorance, has manifest link ignorance. Yeah? So think about it. So, in the next paragraph, there's detailed explanation of the link of karmic formation. I don't think I need to go through that in detail. You can read the information, which gives more clarification of what the link ignorance is. The symbol in the painting, the symbol of karmic formation or volition, is a person making pots of many different sizes. So that many different sizes means that throwing karma leads to many different types of rebirth. You know, animal rebirth, hungry ghost, hell, human, divine being. They're all different. So the karmic potency that is established by the link, the second link, karmic formation, can lead to many different types of rebirth. So, now, that karmic potency has been created by the motivational action, right? The action motivated by ignorance and a virtuous or non-virtuous mental factor, and the action has been done. So that when that action ceases, it doesn't just disappear. It leaves a potency upon the mind stream, upon the consciousness, the mental consciousness. So that is the third link. The third link, which is called consciousness, is actually the consciousness bearing the particular potency created by that particular second link, karmic formation. So this is why it says, as that intention behind the karmic act finishes, then its cessation gives rise to the potency, or it becomes the entity of a potency on the mental consciousness, or it can be said to be carried on the mere I, the merely labeled person. There's no contradiction. And when we say it's carried by the mere eye, this shows the connection between one life and future lives, because it's the merely labeled eye, labeled upon the, as I mentioned yesterday, the most subtle, clear light, wind and mind, which exists now and exists in the intermediate, that in-between state, or bada, exists in the future life, this continuity of the person. So that's why the future person experiences the result of karma created by its mental continual, but not by anybody else's mental continual. It's impossible for an individual to experience other person's karmic potencies, because the potencies were established on our continuum, and we all have unique mental continua. We don't have the same minds, they're different. And so we can't transfer our karma onto the mind of another person. And we can't take their negative karma upon ourselves. I mean, if that were possible, the Buddhas would have done it a long time ago. They have universal compassion and love. If they could take our karma upon themselves, they would do so. If they could give their good karma to us, they would do so. But they can dedicate their good karma to others, and we can dedicate our karma to others. Now, the act of dedication is not transferring karmic potencies. But we're all interlinked. We all have, because of our relationships with each other, we have psychic communication. And we know that, you know, in general, in the home, you know, the family home, if one person is upset, or, you know, maybe angry, the other people in the family can pick it up. It affects their minds. And it's not only the visible expression of anger or the audible, you know, loud shouting voice of anger, but there is a psychological, intuitive effect of somebody's anger, even not necessarily close to us, but we pick it up. It affects our mind. And also, somebody very loving and kind that benefits our mind in the family. It makes the whole family peaceful. Yes, through their verbal actions and through their physical expression, kind face, smiling eyes, but also just their mental state benefits our mind. So when we do virtue and we dedicate this to sentient beings, because we are related to all sentient beings, and we sincerely have compassion, like Lama Zogchen Rinpoche has said, we should do specific prayers and mantras for the coronavirus to try and prevent it causing so much suffering. Then we think, our mind embraces as many sentient beings as we can, hopefully all sentient beings, and we do a virtuous action reciting a mantra. Because our mind is thinking of others and doing a virtuous action, particularly a powerful action of mantra recitation, that benefits the world. And the dedication of that virtue benefits others. It benefits others directly, and it benefits others indirectly, because it is an expression of bodhicitta. Bodhicitta embraces all living beings with love and compassion. So it enhances our capacity to achieve Buddhahood. It becomes a cause for our mind to become enlightened. And the only purpose for becoming a Buddha is to benefit sentient beings. And Buddhas have great power to benefit sentient beings. So there is direct mind-to-mind benefit, and there's the indirect benefit of it brings our attainment of Buddhahood closer. And when we become Buddhas, we will be able to benefit others so much more. All right. Now, how do we get onto that? Yeah. The story of?
What about rejoicing? The act of rejoicing.
Huh?
The act of rejoicing.
Of rejoicing. Sure. Rejoicing is a... If we rejoice in our own actions... Oh no, let's go back. A karmic action has four branches. There's the object. There's the motivation. There's the action itself, and there's the completion of the action. The completion of action is being satisfied that it's happened. Right? So we're negative karma, we want to steal something. So there's the object can be stolen, there's the thought, selfish, there's the action of stealing, and then I've got it, it's mine. That's rejoicing in a negative sense. The more we think how wonderful I got that, the heavier the karma becomes. So when we do virtuous actions, they're the same four branches. The fourth branch, the completion, is being content. Like it's good to help sentient beings, but we should know that is a result of our purposeful action, and rejoice in that. So the more we feel delighted that this sentient being has been released from their problem by my action, the stronger that virtue will become. That's our own actions. Then, when others do virtuous actions to help sentient beings, and we think about it, and again, this genuine, how fantastic that they were able to be helped by this Lama or whoever helped. Then the mere act of rejoicing if we have if we're at an equal mental level of the person who did the virtue, we have equal karma. We create the same karma as they did. If we have bodhicitta, where we genuinely embrace all sentient beings and we rejoice in a person's simple action of helping one other person, we create far more merit. We create the merit of a bodhisattva. We are a bodhisattva because we've got bodhicitta. So that's rejoicing. Yeah. So if the recipient of our virtuous action didn't want it and resents being helped or looked after, how does that affect the karma?
Yes.
Well, compassion, like there are two legs to walk on the path to enlightenment. One is compassion, the other is wisdom. So the perfection of generosity, for example, is necessarily combined with the perfection of wisdom. So our generous acts have to have wisdom, not only the wisdom realizing emptiness, but wisdom understanding the conventional situation. And there might be, as you say, there could be a situation where you are motivated with compassion to help somebody, but, well, they may resent it. From your side, it's still virtuous. You have the virtuous intention. So, even if they resent it, that won't change your virtuous karma. From their side, resentment, like people tried to kill Buddha, who had perfect motive, and they created negative karma. It's one of the heinous crimes is to wound a Buddha with intent to kill. You cannot kill a Buddha because Buddhas can't be killed. Or Devadatta, cause blood to flow from the Buddha. So from that point of view, it won't change, but it may have been more skillful if you had the knowledge that this person would resent being helped, and they would create negative karma through our virtuous action, like Devadatta did to Buddha. Then one might work out a way of avoiding the resentment. Another way is, I use an example of one of the books, The Perfect Mirror, I think I wrote, that in Nepal, near the Pokhara region, they grew the best oranges in the Himalayas, and they were renowned for it for centuries, really tasty oranges. And a well-intentioned American came along, this is true, and said, you need Californian oranges. And so out of the proper intention, he imported some Californian orange trees and gave them to the farmers in the Pokhara Valley. Unfortunately, the Californian trees carried a disease which killed all of the orange trees in the entire Pokhara Valley. So that was dumb compassion, idiot compassion, The result was disastrous. So Again, we need wisdom to give the appropriate thing. You know, like if somebody is an alcoholic and they ask you to buy them alcohol, then even though that's what they really want, they'd be so happy if you give them alcohol, it's not wise to give them alcohol. So you might make them unhappy by refusing to do it, but you've used wisdom.
Can I say that the ignorance thing is unpredictable due to self-grasping?
Sorry, the number?
Can I say the ignorance thing is unpredictable because due to the self-grasping?
I didn't, you speak too fast.
Okay. can I say the ignorance thing? Ignorance thing?
No, what was it?
Ignorance thing.
Ignorance?
Yeah, is unpredictable.
Unpredicted?
Due to our
self-grasping. Oh, I see.
Yes.
The term unpredicted, Buddha was asked, is this thing virtuous or non-virtuous? And so there are things which he said were virtuous by nature. Things are not virtuous by nature. But the link ignorance is neither virtuous nor non-virtuous. He did not predict, he did not say that it's virtuous or not virtuous. That's why it's unpredicted. But you see, unpredicted can change. For example, intention, the mental factor of intention, is neither virtuous or non-virtuous. But it can become virtuous when it's associated with a virtuous mental factor. Or it can become non-virtuous when it's associated with a non-virtuous mental factor. So that's why karmic formation can be meritorious or non-meritorious in dependence upon whether there is a manifest virtuous mental factor or non-virtuous mental factor. So I mean, you're asking why is the link ignorance unpredicted? That's your question. Why is it unpredicted? Well, because it's not virtuous and it's not non-virtuous. It in itself doesn't fit into those categories. Think of... Yeah. In the which? The
ignorance link. It is necessarily a self-grasping of person. Grasping of self.
Yes. The definition of ignorance link is self-grasping of person, either innate or acquired.
So, and it is a cause for the true karma.
It is the cause for the second link, karmic formation, yes. Yeah.
Life.
Yeah.
Right. So does that mean that self-grasping of phenomena doesn't cause the projected karma, the true karma?
Ah, good question. In that situation, in the definition of ignorance link, no, self-grasping of phenomenon alone does not create karma. It is root of psychic existence, yeah.
So, self-grasping of the person has to become associated with the self-grasping of phenomena, and in combination, they then become the true karma? Is that
right? Yeah, I mean, our mind is quite complex, and we break it up to look at the different things. It's like I see a beautiful bell, not so beautiful, but Anyway, I see it as beautiful, and there is self-grasping of phenomenon, beautiful, inherent existing phenomenon. So that's just that ignorance. But then there's a self-grasping of person. I want that. So that self-grasping of person, that is link ignorance. And the object is the phenomenon that I see to be inherent existing. But just seeing it as inherent existing is not a cause for karma, the second link. That comes from self-grasping. I want, or I don't want. Yeah, so this is really a good question because it gets to the very root of karma. I want, I don't want. All right. Of course there is self-grasping a phenomenon in the sequence of thoughts. This is why action is not a one-off thing. It is a whole sequence of thinking about something that leads up to the action. And the action is all important, whether it's virtuous or non-virtuous. All right, so a lot to think about over the lunch break. we'll finish off the links after lunch.